I call the February 4th Finance Committee of the whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
It's 7:02 p.m. Member Bourne is absent. Member Brooks?
Yes.
Member Ludden?
Yes.
Member Underdunk is absent. Chair Covey?
Here.
We do have a quorum.
It is our practice not to address questions at this time. We will take public comments under advisement. Please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. There is no one here, so I think we can move on.
All right. Okay, so we're going to start out with GYS/SNAP and GGHP stipend requests. So their requests are in the board packet, actually. Let's start with GYS and SNAP. GYS has a new executive director. Bobby and I met with them, last month. Doing great things there. Revitalizing the whole program. Very outgoing, very nice gentleman. He's leading in a great direction. They did request last year, fiscal year, they requested $10,000 and then $1,000 for SNAP. They are requesting more. It is the staff's advisement not to raise their stipend because we do an incredible amount of in-kind services for them. Mm-hmm. We provide the building. Mm-hmm. We provide $2,000 worth of maintenance every year. We'll talk about later our preventative HVAC plan. We do snow removal. So we do a lot of in-service that isn't even noted here, and I think the village only gives about $1,000 more. So we don't recommend increasing that. Same with SNAP. Again, that's a special needs program. We have NSSRA that provides a lot of those same services. This is more like a dinner club in our estimation. So again, we provide some support and the facility to hold that in. We think we don't recommend an increase, and this is a $10,000-$1,000 is what we put in the budget. Any questions on this? Okay.
Lisa, increased our contribution to them in line with inflation. And
we've had $10,000 for the last couple of years, but we've been doing actually probably a little bit more than $2,000 in the building, in the facility itself. So we put a big investment when we did the Berlin Field. Mm-hmm. We've been doing some other things around that building, so we've been making more of in-kind. What we are going to suggest, though, is next year, it looks like the roof will have to be replaced next year. So we'll not this budget year, next budget year. So we're going to make a note to them that looks like we'll have to pay for the roof. So we might recommend that we ask them to pay for 50%. We pay for 50% of the roof. Mm-hmm. I think we do other things that are above and beyond what they normally do.
What's the expense for the roof estimate?
I don't know if we got there yet. It's not this year, it's next year.
But is it like it's a flat roof?
No.
It's
small.
It's a very, very small roof, but it is prevailing wage, so it's not like it's doing a two-car garage, even though that's the size of it. I mean, imagine, we could provide that information to the board at a later date.
Okay.
And have that estimate in front of us today.
Are they going to view us offering to pay for half of it as, geez, that's really generous, or holy cow, we didn't know we had to pay for half of it?
Well, we've told them, actually, we've been hearing them for years that we're providing you this building, but any capital improvements have to be done. You start budgeting and start fundraising for that, start getting ready for that. So they should be aware of it, but they've had like 3 executive director changes. Every time a new one comes in, I sit down meet with them and say, remember, this is what the deal is. Here's our lease. You have to pay for any capital improvements on this building because we let you lease it for $1 a year. So they are aware of it, I'm sure.
We had extensive discussions with their board during the Berlin project.
We did.
Because they were originally trying to raise the money to replace the facility as part of the project. Mm-hmm. And there was a significant dialogue about how the building got to be in the condition that it's in and what their role is to continue to maintain that building as kind of a tenant.
Mm-hmm. They're doing a much better job inside the building. It's much cleaner than it used to be. We do periodic inspections, and every time we go in there, it's been much better than it used to be, so we're happy about that. So, and they've replaced the carpet themselves, so they've done that stuff. So I think if we go above and beyond our $2,000 contribution for maintenance, that would be, very nice on both sides. So
not to beat a dead horse.
which may not be a nice thing to say. I apologize if I insult anybody who likes horses. I don't want to say that. You know, isn't the idea, once this building becomes in such disrepair that $2,000 a year can't keep it going,
yes,
we're encouraging them to use one of our other facilities for their meetings because that building is just not necessary and it's just a...
Well, in reality, right now, we wouldn't have a place to hold their teen center. So in reality, this building's already filled.
But Watts will be available.
No, not necessarily. If our after-school program keeps going like it is, it may not be able to house that either.
Okay. All right.
What do you think? Okay. Anyway, so that was originally planned, but there was also talk about them leasing space downtown, things like that. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the idea of them coming here is really not a feasible solution anymore either.
At the time we looked at it, though, was that the initial discussion was to do it here, and now we just don't have the room.
Right,
there,
exactly. Right? It was here, not Watts, originally. So. So even if we did get that park grant and expand that, I don't know if there'd be enough room for that program in there either.
At some point.
Okay. Then GGHP continues to be a great organization, housed out of the Glencoe Middle which school is that?
Central.
For middle schools, their main purpose is they do performing arts, social and community events, which they have increased considerably, the Oasis Youth Center and then civic engagement. Their stipend last year was $10,000. They're asking for the same $10,000. Their budget looks very healthy. They continue to be able to fundraise and do things like that. So staff's recommending keeping that stipend the same also.
Can I ask a question?
You can.
I would have asked them, but they're not here.
You can.
So I'll just say this. When I look at the financials, I look at two completely different forks. That's tines of the fork. One is the musical theater performance they do, which is pay to play. The other is civic engagement.
Correct.
And sort of social events. So one of my questions is, and much of the budget seems to be geared towards the theater situation, so the musical theater. So one of my specific questions was, how are funds used this past year? That was of particular interest to me. They have two full-time youth directors who do all of their programming, their social things, and their civic engagement. And one of their responsibilities is to help perform the paperwork necessary for fundraising and our performing arts initiatives during school hours. So they are paid to run the youth program, but used to fundraise. And I just thought that seemed a little odd. I don't know if anybody else noticed that, because fundraising is typically done by volunteers, not by paid youth.
No, a lot of times staff is used for that,
okay,
so I don't think that's quite unusual.
From my experience, I would say that is unusual.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of their, lack of volunteers wanting to do that. I'm sure the volunteers still have to help with that, but I'm sure they're the ones that organize it.
And then the other thing I was missing is, I'm sure I just missed it, what is the contribution from School District 35 and the PTO?
So I believe that we don't have a dollar amount. We don't have cash donation, but it looks like it's in-kind donation, use of the theater and the school for their programs.
I thought that was interesting, too, the school program. It's technically
not a school program, but they're a separate entity, but they just get in-kind support from the school district.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just like we give in kind to GYF. So, yes.
Well, no one here can answer those questions anyway because there's somebody here from.
Did you see that note in the financials? Because I noticed Lauterbach and Eamon is doing the audit and they didn't do it the year before.
Okay.
And the fair value of the facilities of the Oasis Room of $41,800 and the auditorium of $31,900. And then in the prior year, there were no in kind donations recorded.
So they're valuing the in-kind donation from 35 as how much?
I'm not sure where the Oasis room is.
That's in the school, central.
The school room.
Okay,
yeah.
And the auditorium.
How much total is that?
Total of is like 72.
72,000?
Mm-hmm. Over 72.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, you would look at our in kind donation to GYS, so it's probably the same. All right. So question is would you like to advance this to approval for next month? For those stipend amounts? For
yes.
10,100 with 10,000 and stamps 1,000 and GGHP at 10,000.
For the purposes of the first draft, that's what's included in here right now.
Right.
So if that were to change, I'd just change it in the next draft.
But we would need to take action in at the board meeting, so. So we have a yes? We're not voting technically, but
yes.
I'm advancing it.
I can just add that I don't understand, obviously I don't speak for all the commissioners, but I don't understand that our mission or general position about what we're trying to do in the community has changed, nor do I perceive theirs has changed. And so unless there was some really compelling reason to surprise them by not doing what we have done consistently for years, I think we should do it again.
Okay. Michael?
As someone who has a family member who's closely involved with GJHP, I'm going to abstain from any thoughts on this.
Lisa?
With reservation, I would say yes. But
okay.
I do have reservations and have had every single year I've been on this board. So, consistent.
What are those reservations?
In line with what, I think they have a very good fundraising arm. I think that these are really typically school function things, like the school dance and the school play, but that it's outsourced, and when I had children in the district, and I learned that you had to pay to be part of this, that made me uncomfortable, because, you know, that's not always easy for everybody. And so I just not sure why they also come to us for money as well. So in any case, yes, but with reservation.
They do have net assets without donor restrictions of $257,223. They have a good fund balance.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay. So we'll advance it to the board meeting and then the vote will be taken?
Okay. Good.
Sounds good. All right.
All right. So I guess we go on to the budget.
Yes, we do.
Correct?
Yep.
As it is a similar format to previous years, I am going to go through section by section, open it up to questions. I did meet with Michael very briefly before the meeting with Lisa to answer some of his questions. And if you have a question, just jump right on and ask it, and we'll answer it at that point in time. The first section is the summary section, and you know we kind of start with all the premises that are listed on the second page of that first section, and there has been no change in really on what our premises are as it relates to providing you with this first draft of the budget. We do start the budget process literally end of August, early September, if you can believe. So as soon as camps are done, Bobby is really working with his staff to already start that from a program level, and we start to do a lot of the capital discussions and the departmental budget. So we're consistently the same timeline. We're starting our budget very early compared to where we're at right now. We always strive to maintain the 50% guidelines in our corporate and rec, and I'm happy to report that this year with the first draft, we'll continue to meet that guideline. We are doing a lot of capital projects this year. Fund 65 has over $700,000, and primarily it's the two HVAC units that we have talked about in previous meetings as making up the bulk of that. There is a little bit more in special recreation fund this year because we do have our contribution to NSSRA for our building. We are not financing any of our contribution because we can pay for it out of our fund balance reserves and what we levy. And then Fund 69 really is the big one with the Connect Glencoe Trail. We've received a lot of grants for this year, and I'll go into that more in detail in Section 5. That and the Duke Playground spray train area really is the bulk of that $2.7 million. We're proposing a 3% merit pool, and that's based on the fact that we had a 1.9 CPI figure used for our levy, which this is built on. The budget is built on those revenues for tax dollars. We typically build in a little bit of a cushion to actually have the merit pool, and we'll talk again later on that in the latter part of this meeting. Really, when all is said and done, we will have a little over $2.6 million in corporate fund balance at the end of this year, a little over $3.8 million in recreation, and given the transfers of $1.5 million into Fund 69, we're still looking to meet the 50% guideline in corporate and rec, and that we will still be able to transfer anywhere from $800,000 to $1 million into Fund 69 for future projects. Just want to note that the total now that we've been able to transfer fund those corporate and rec is now $7.3 million before we commit to any transfer. So that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that we have not had to issue debt for. And I think that speaks to really a good plan that we've had with our capital needs in meeting those needs. We are looking, obviously, to do the bond issue for some of the bigger projects, primarily the Watts renovation project and the park maintenance garage facility, which again we'll talk about later on in the meeting.
Carol?
Yes?
I had a question about the fund balance transfers, because I had a little trouble reconciling to you before. Would you like to come back to that later?
Yeah, we can talk about it now.
Okay, very long. Tab 2? Assuming?
It's in tab 2 and it's table 4.
Okay, table 4.
I only mention it now because you just mentioned it. I see you were just referred to 50% fund balance, which is our target, but then
correct.
I see 69 and 63 here, and I was confused about fiscal year 19-20 and what that refers to, so maybe you can help me understand.
So at the end of fiscal year 19-20, which ends the end of this month, you see the 2.6 and the 3.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
That includes what's going to be budgeted next year for the transfer into 69. And so those zeros in the next fiscal year don't reflect really those top, see those undesignated transfer to capital and the top line, the 582 mm-hmm. and the 690, that really is what's making up the differential between that 50% to the 69 and the 50% to the 63. So that's transferable money when it comes to post-audit and we make the decision to transfer money down to the 50% guideline.
So the where to set this, the column in the middle, the 229.20 projected fund balance?
Yep. That's fiscal year.
That's for the budget that we decided last year?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So and last 69%. What is the calculation that comes up with 69%?
That's the ending balance as of this new budget year, so it's February 28, 2021, over what expected percent or expenditures are for this current budget, the new current budget that we're going to talk about.
Which two numbers are divided to get 69%?
Two million and 3 million or somewhere.
You got to
right?
go back to the expense side of this. Which is table 2. If you look at the total corporate net,
3.046,
3046 yeah. and 5.22.
So you're going to spend 3.046.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have 2.18 left, so 2.12
no,
left.
It's taking 2.18 divided by 3.046.
Right.
That's approximately 70%.
Denominator is expenses, numerator is balance at the end. Right? Numerator is your balance at the end.
It's basically, you're saying that over... Yeah.
But the numerator is your balance at the end divided by your expenses of the year. This is your expense. This is your balance at the end.
Balance divided by
numerator.
Expenses, correct.
Denominator is expenses on that account.
Yes, net expenses. There's another schedule in here that might be a little bit easier to see, because you can see.
What page is that?
If you haven't, it's a way of measuring that you haven't spent, that you've kept 70% of the expenses in the account.
So this is what we're going to have as of the end of this fiscal year. This is
2.6 million.
Correct. So this is already committed to. Committed means you can't include it in what the fund balance percentage is, because it's committed to its unrestricted fund balance reserves.
There you go.
And actually, even the 12,000 is not, because that's committed to medical expenses.
So when we say we're targeting 50% and I see 69%,
that means we have money to transfer to Fund 69.
That we haven't discussed yet already?
Correct. That we wait until the audit to make that determination. So we wait because right now we still have a month left in our fiscal year.
Right.
We got a pretty good idea.
So how much would that be today if the projection on our
to transfer?
To 50%.
Yeah, it would be $630,000.
For REC, and how much?
No, for corporate.
For corporate.
For REC, it's 544.
So approximately 1.5 million.
Right, between 8 and 1 million is that I'm thinking, and probably closer to the million.
It's this number here. It's the top line on table 4, right? This is the undesignated transfer.
Right.
Is the
right.
number? Is that? This is the number you could remove
right.
from.
Exactly.
You could remove that from the 218.
From the fund balance.
Yep. The fund balance. And get yourself to numerator of balance divided by expenses.
And that's literally what I do. After the audited numbers come through, I literally plug them into that. And I, you know, we could go down all the way to 50. We could go under 50.
We're not going to. I don't think we need to.
Yeah.
So this year we did 1.4.
1.5.
Sorry, 1.5. You're saying looks likely we'd be able to do 1.1.
But 50.
This says 1.2.
50 is an arbitrary number. Like we make
50 is 6 months of our operating expense.
Yeah,
right. But
which is best practice.
But that's you could do 70%. You could do
Right. Yeah.
And we
50
have.
Is
right.
the number that we've.
We yes. built it up from
25. That gives us a comfortable amount
right.
of cushion.
Yeah.
Right.
So at one time it was 25%.
We built at one it up, time it was 15%.
If you're desperate for cash, you'd go lower, right?
Yep. Right. If you have a big project or you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
There you go.
So, just I always like to do like the top 10 projects from a capital perspective in this summary.
David Letterman.
page right here. Capital projects on tab 2 or 1. Tab 1, last page.
I know. Make sure Bob's got it right.
Can I? Glencoe Trail, the Duke Spray Train project. Again, that is making up the bulk of the 2.7 in Fund 69. We've got some carryover for the Schumann Overlook, the two rooftop units, which are in Fund 65 at 215, retaining wall at the beach, which we will are budgeting to get a 50% contribution from the village.
So this isn't 50%. This is the whole.
This is the whole cost.
Yeah.
The whole.
Yeah. Okay. But we'll get 50% back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, but the and the number 1 doesn't include the revenue from.
Right.
The grants, right?
No, none of that. This is just the expenses of the
daily expenditures. Yep. You see the gas kiln is in there. That's coming out of Fund 65 without any additional reserves out of recreation. I believe the last time we talked about it, that was going to be a possibility. Mm-hmm. Does not have to happen.
Okay.
Halfway house, just a slight carryover. One of Chris's big pickups replacements. And the top gym floor. So that's the bulk of the capital program. Getting into the summary pages in section 2. As previous years, we like to break down operationally, which are really all the funds that we levy taxes for at the top. And then you see the capital project funds underneath that. You'll notice under capital revenues, the bond proceeds are shown in the capital revenues, thus the $5.658 million. That includes $4,125,000 in anticipated bond proceeds.
I have a silly question I probably should have asked you earlier, but I understand that the levy comes in the corporate fund and the RECREM and these other funds there. Mm-hmm. When we collect money for a program, how do we determine what percent goes into corporate or rec or
anything?
Doesn't it
all goes into recreation?
It all goes, 100% of it goes into recreation.
Yeah. So you'll see at the top for recreation, there's kind of the admin takeoff. That's the operational part of the takeoff center. Then the rec programs, all the programs go into the rec programs department.
So 6.815 million here is 100% collected from taxes?
No.
Okay.
The taxes probably come in at just over $2 million,
right?
In the admin part.
So there's
fund balances in there.
I always forget that you guys include, it drives me nuts that government accounting includes an asset as revenue.
Oh,
it is.
It's so,
I will never get it.
I'll never get it.
And you can have that on the recording that I will never understand. It just blows my mind. But okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Let's do that.
Okay. Can't change it. Let's do that.
So of this 6.8 million in the corporate fund, mm-hmm. one third of this is new money coming in from taxes, and two thirds is about fund balance.
And there are programs. So you see, Watts money comes in, and the Beach and Boathouse
come
in.
Got it.
So that's why we kind of break it down by department. Chris brings in a whopping $350.
That's right, I do.
Although with
he projected 12.4 last year, so.
Although he did get a little bit more than he got some good donations this year.
I figured Chris is just mowing lawn for someone, mowing lawns on for somebody.
His lawn shower.
From a perspective of the expenses side, the next page, operationally we're going up about 5%. The bond and interest fund does include issuance costs for the bonds, so we're planning to pay for the issuance costs out of the debt service fund. The proceeds will be recorded in the capital projects fund to be spent on the projects that we determined to spend them on. So thus you see the net capital expenses are going up about 38% because of the project. For a total budget of a little over 11.5%. So the bulk of that is the $2.79 million in Fund 69.
I did ask that maybe we can have Lisa a percentage column at some point over here so we can follow this a little bit more closely. Because I sat there doing a bunch of math on it.
And percentages are just easier to reference.
Yeah, it's easier to understand.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, if you look at, I was trying to figure out some of how the bond plays into all this stuff too. But 69, the Master Capital Fund, this 1.4 million, sorry, this one over here, the Master Plan Capital Fund, we budgeted 1.8 million in 1920. We're only using about 1.3 million, $500,000. And then we have a higher budget over there. Where does that, help me understand where this money comes from again, the Master Plan Capital? Is this the ones that were transferred?
This is the transfer from corporate.
This is the extra $500 that we just talked about
twice,
and I keep on forgetting.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's coming directly from corporate and rec extra fund balances.
Yep.
And as you saw, we carried over some of them, which would be why the projected's lower, so we're carrying over some of it.
But we're going from, you know, we budgeted about 13 mil for 2019-20. We are projecting 12 mil, right, on the bottom. And we're budgeting 14.4 mil.
Yep.
So it's a big
jump
from year over year.
Yeah.
Healthy, we can absorb it. But it's
to your point, Michael.
It's a big jump.
If you come from private accounting, this mixes operating and capital expenses. So
it's... Right, we have capital.
It's a big jump, but...
Because we're doing 2 million.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's hard to tell what the true operating... Right.
I think you can see it.
Not on this page.
If you look up here on the operating expense here, the question still rises, you know, why are we spending $1.5 million more of taxpayer dollars on the total operating expenses versus your projected... right? You're projecting the middle of the page under 55, 12.7, and we're going up to 14.1, right? So it's $1.5 million increase.
Correct.
And it is mostly coming, a lot of it's coming from up here. We have 400,000 from the administration.
Transfer.
But that's going to end up going to capital expenses.
True.
So it's very hard to tell that this 400,000 up here, which looks like an operating, right? Because this is
well, but that's why then you subtract out transfers right here. So you really got to look at that.
Okay, that's the line to look at?
Right, yeah, the whole right here. Line.
Got it.
This is the Carroll line.
That helps out tremendously.
What?
She asked me if I went to school for this. I said, is this the Carroll line?
Yeah. Governmental accounting is...
Oh,
listen,
my God.
Totally different.
Oh.
I'm private sector accounting, too, so this is new.
I love private sector accounting.
It's a lot easier.
Okay.
Yeah, love is a strong word.
I do. I do.
Yeah, I like it.
I love it.
Really?
I love it.
Oh, I can kind of tell.
I love it. It's a fair part of my job.
I can tell.
Yeah. Plus it. Doesn't like government accounting.
I don't like government accounting. Okay.
Okay. So let's just go ahead to that page that Josh.
Table four.
Okay.
And really, you see all the percentages. There's a couple I'd like to highlight that now are under the 25% that I really am not concerned about, but they're just on the radar and perhaps next year as far as the levy amount. They're really due to expanding our daycare program and the minimum wage increase over the next 5 years. But you see Social Security is down to 17% by the end of next fiscal year. And the audit fund is down to 16%, which is literally, I mean, it costs $13,000 for our annual audit.
So that's literally just a function of how we put the tax levy together.
Correct.
And so that's something we can easily correct for.
Correct.
Should we want to.
Yep. So, as mentioned earlier, I think we're going to have the ability again to do $1 million transfer. I'm pretty confident in that. Don't see anything in this next month of operation that's really going to prevent us from doing that come June. So, and then the schedules are just kind of different ways to look at pretty much the same thing. We do the corporate and the recreation, so you can kind of see specifically over time and how the fund balances have grown. Which is kind of exciting to see after, again, talking about having them at 15% not that long ago in reality. That I think that we're healthy, we're continuing to be able to fund our capital program, our master plan capital program, and you know, there have been some operational things that we'll talk about later on in the meeting that, you know, the minimum wage law obviously will have continue to have an effect over the next 5 years going up to the rate. But I think we've already built in some of that in the earlier years to prevent some of that shock. I know, Bob, you've talked about, how was it Winnetka that had for their lifeguard rate?
Deerfield,
that's right.
$8.50 up to $12 this year. Yeah.
So I think doing that proactively will help us in the fact that we have done it and hopefully can retain some more of our staff.
Yeah.
The next schedule really is a breakdown by program members. The scholarship employee discount, you'll notice a big jump there budgeted for fiscal year 2021. That really has to do with consistently tracking all the scholarships and employee discounts. Scholarships and employee discounts for everything other than the daycare program was included in here.
I would have thought that bulk of that was daycare program. But
no, no, it's other than.
All right,
well,
that's
this is now.
Now it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Now
thank
it
goodness, because if it was not, that would be.
And we not only to track the discounts, but we thought it was, I guess, a fair way to represent. We wanted to track it, but we also didn't want to penalize daycare for the fact that it really is more in an employee benefit.
Did
keep a little bit in there for the one daycare staff member who is utilizing that. But we very well could move it all into here. I guess that's...
Are employees paying imputed income on it, on their value?
They are getting taxed on it,
So that value is the same exact that you're putting here? I imagine that the taxable value should be the same as...
No, they actually get a 20% exclusion per the IRS.
So it's 80% of the value?
Mm-hmm. Well, and they pay 50. So their discount is 50%.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they get 50%.
They get 20% off.
They get 20% off, and so they have a tax on 30%.
So this is a representation of the 30%.
Correct. No, it's actually 50. They're getting taxed on 30.
They're getting taxed on 30. Right, because as a benefit, you're giving 20% off.
We're giving a benefit, right.
And do, like, gym memberships and all that other stuff go in here?
No.
Okay.
No. Only employee, because
it's not taxable.
The IRS actually treats that differently,
yeah.
That we're not displacing revenue.
Right.
But we are displacing revenue by employees in the program.
I am so thrilled to see there's other companies that look at tax benefits in terms of displacement other than ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a big one for us, obviously, with...
Yeah, no, I mean, we do the same thing. If it's mm-hmm. displacement, it's a different story than non-displacement. Much different story.
So the good news is that I think we're obviously retaining wonderful qualified staff,
yep.
And it's been a huge benefit. I just think it was... Number one, not fair to really
care. I'm saying it as a, I actually think it's, I love the transparency of it. I do think that you attract better staff when you have things like a gym available, when you have things like discounted daycare. I think it's a necessity. I think it's competitive. But I do love the transparency of it. And if this is the amount, or that minus 20%, that's being hit on the incomes, it should be transparent here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a phenomenal program. Don't recommend getting rid of it. I just like the transparency behind it.
Excellent. Thank you.
We
appreciate that.
We track that. And we track, again, for regular recreation programs because we do have discounts for part-time staff.
You should.
And so that's all tracked for tax purposes as
good.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a whole lot, and I maybe defer to Bobby on anything that might jump out. I think, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. We have the detailed sheets if you want any... Understanding, Michael, I know you were kind of talking, we did see a decrease in our our ELC program, and have.
And with that, and I was also telling you, Michael, and just so you know, even though we have a different ELC, we still have to have two teachers in the room. So when you have different revenue, doesn't mean your expenses go down equally.
Right.
Those are have to stay, they're static.
Yeah.
So you'll see the differences unless we...
Yeah, the
room's full, so.
Earlier, what I noticed was, and it's not atypical for a first round, is you see expenses going up, you see revenues kind of flat or down. It's surprising to me, knowing that we have a wait list for these programs, that we think our revenues are either flat or down, but I know a lot of it's driven by ELC, but it's something that I do think we should be cognizant of as we move forward, right? We want to see if what we can pass along to the tax. If wages are going up because of minimum wage, you know, how far can you push that to the to the recipient? Especially the ELC is subsidized, but now, Children's Circle is not.
Children's Circle has to meet all its direct and
indirect expenses, right?
ELC actually meets a lot of its indirect expenses
but
also.
But they're not obligated to.
Right, per policy, but they do.
Which is good, right?
Based on our carriers of services. But what I was telling Michael is that minimum wage is going up at the point that we cannot raise fees at the same rate. It would be too much of a hardship on our families to do that.
Right.
So we're increasing them, but gradually, and hopefully catch up. And we also did a big... especially in children's circles, we increased the salaries of all those. We found through our salary survey that they were underpaid.
Yeah.
So not only did we do jump, but we also have to do the minimum wage.
Yeah.
So we just can't pass on that big of a jump. It would just be unfair to our, you know, what were we figuring if we do
a proposed increase for the infant room this year will be $1,000 per family per child.
Plus.
So
that's a lot.
For non-residents, 4% increase that we're proposing, it's over $1,000.
Yeah.
So we really can't do any more than that.
No.
But we have to be cognizant of the fact that there's a balance here, and I appreciate the balance, but we do need to get to a you can't keep the trajectory up of increasing expenses and not increasing revenues with it. I'm not saying this is the year to do it, But it is just, maybe next year we don't have to increase wages as much, and
we're increasing it, and we're going with our guidelines of a category service. So in the past, maybe we were charging too much based on how much net we were bringing with Children's Circle. We were about, what, 100, 150 at some years?
Almost 200.
Almost 200 one year. Yeah. So we were big to it. Now, that was fine, because then we took that 200, actually put it into the playground.
Yeah.
But now we have a brand new playground. So we really, we were actually making too much in that program. Yeah. So we made a conscious effort. If you remember last year, we talked about this. Yeah. We said, hey, listen, we're going to raise our Children's Circle salary, and we talked it as a board, and we're going to lower our net in that program. So we did make a conscious discussion about doing that. So we knew that was going to happen. We were making too much in that program. The playground was done. We don't need to train. We don't need as much for building improvements. We need some. We still need some. We don't need as much. So we're going to raise those salaries and then slowly move up the thing. So it was a conscious decision.
My point is, I'm glad it's a conscious decision. I know I wasn't on the board. I know we've talked about it before. We just had to think about we could do this for 1 or 2 years. You don't get the luxury of doing that. That gap is only shrink so much if we want to.
Well, I don't know if you were on the board, but every year we go over.
I was not.
We go over this category as a service, and this is how we shut down the job and down the way. We go through this. And this
we did.
August, so we'll look again at May at this, and we'll reevaluate. See if there's any changes on the board.
Yep.
Hey, we change our philosophy, but based on this philosophy, our discussion in May when we started budgeting in August, this is when we went off. So we were looking at 150 net to cover those indirect expenses.
Yep.
So we're right on target for what was planned with our category services. So that's what we based our on.
In all of this too, I always like to do competitive analysis. This is not a for-profit daycare. It's a community daycare.
Right.
How do these rates compare to, say, a for-profit like the Horizon?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. So we do
essential to look at.
We do comparisons for all of our major programs, and Bobby can speak to it because they did the analysis for Children's Circle, and we're right in there.
We did an independent analysis that we actually got another department to do the analysis, call other daycares, and we're like right in the middle with those higher end daycares that we do compete against.
Mm-hmm.
It is worth noting, like, yes, there is wait lists, but you tend to find with daycares that once you hit a certain price, people, like, the wait list falls off really quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, people suddenly are like, the price elasticity totally changes.
Well, you have the substitute of a nanny, right? And so you have to be, to make it worthwhile. Unrelated to the budget, but related to this wonderful asset that we have of Children's Circle, is there a plan at some point to think about how we could expand it, how we could get more space somewhere, anywhere?
You know, not right now. We just don't have the facility space. We'd have to add multiple rooms.
Classrooms.
So it's not like you can just add one.
But
and
is there
expected.
Like,
we have no place. We'd have to add onto this facility. And you've seen our $14 million in capital.
No, I know, but I'm thinking of outside the box of, you've got NSCI over there. You've got, and I know we talked about people may not want to bus to the
but their program spaces aren't filled.
NSSRA. I do think it would be awesome if we could at some point think about how we could service the 40 to 50% of the families that
we're absolutely
saying no to.
At
so
other alternatives and what we can do with WAF and stuff like that.
Sorry, my soapbox.
Children's Circle is tough because of the ratios and the way that DCFS mandates that you have to leave after a certain amount of time in each room. They get bottlenecked, and that's where we ran into the problem originally, where kids were getting stuck. And that's why you sometimes see in the board reports where it says like there's 15 in that classroom and the max is 16.
Yeah.
It's because we actually have to plot out the full time of every single child in the program.
Oh, I know.
So they're within the DCFS rules.
My son had to go from the bluefish to the blue. He felt so special when he got to go with the older
starfish
kids.
To the belugas.
He felt like a million bucks. He was like, ooh, I got to go to the Mrs. Rose's class.
Right.
It's a very challenging operation.
The only way we could extend that program is if GJK was no longer leasing rooms in that building. So, I mean, that would be a very long discussion.
Yes.
With the board to decide it, but that really is the
permanent
solution.
There will be a financial impact of that too.
Right. You make a margin off of those guys, right?
Yeah.
But then it comes back to the idea of do you want to, not the conversation for today's budget, but the discussion is do you want to have a margin off of that, or do you want to serve the community?
Say that GJK also serves community too.
You can.
That would be a discussion.
Just 30% more expensive.
That's a huge, messy discussion that we probably are not ever going to have to have.
We start with lease renewal this year.
I am happy to have that conversation.
Expires May 21.
That's. Should we get the task force started now about which is
actually we started
no
summer
no,
before.
I don't think we're ready to recommend GJK leave.
No.
Unless the board tells me to, I just don't know if that would be the.
But it'd be interesting to see what the community thinks, right?
It's a serious issue, but probably not right now.
Yeah.
We are recommending, actually, and when Carol talks about it, we're recommending doing another community survey.
Yeah.
I know Josh brings this up. We're at the 5-year mark, and you know, statistically, you should do a survey every 5 years. And in fact, for OSLAC grants, we have to do a community survey every 5 years. So we're recommending putting $20,000 in the budget to do that this year.
Yeah.
And probably in the future, many meetings where we'll be talking about what we want to have in that survey and find the company to do that. The village just recently did a survey, and I'll report on that at our board meeting. But some of that data we can use. But but that would be a good question to ask: is do we want more daycare? Or, you know, because there is a part
used by that. I mean, the GJK room is used.
But at some point, you saturate the market too, and then all of a sudden you have these rooms, and now you have less kids, and then all of a sudden you come into subsidizing it. So it's a good.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something you really have to look at.
Just went live with our pre-enrollment for ELC for next year, and so far it's strong. We're on our fours. We're actually at capacity.
I'm hearing more and more families are moving in, and they're all two income families, and
they're moving in for our program.
And the GJK doesn't, unfortunately, and this is where I think a community survey and a task force would be good. GJK doesn't fill that need of a mom and dad, or two moms or two dads, but two working parents out there, while Children's Circle fills that need. And so it's worthy of a discussion as the demographics of Glencoe shift,
right,
to think about what we can and want to do.
But also impact school age kids too. So it's going to, you know, that school programs we've discussed with Watts, that's going to become a challenge as all these kids graduate into second school.
Right.
So we're looking at
there
all
used to be
that.
A
because
yeah,
your after school program, people need that. And they in the before school, they need it. It would be interesting to see the village survey. I'd love to see what percent of the households this year versus 5 years ago are two income versus one.
You can see the survey online. It's on the village website, and the census will be interesting, actually. That'll be fascinating to see, and that'll be...
Okay, sorry for the diversion.
Completely fine. Really, there's a summary sheet of just the recreation department, and it breaks down a little bit more detail.
What tab is that? I'm sorry.
It is the last two pages of tab 2.
Okay, I'm in the right place.
And... you know, it kind of breaks down the admin takeoff department. You got the program department, and I'm going to concentrate a little bit on daycare since we were just talking about that. I think as far as the budget this year, we probably were a little overly aggressive with the expansion, so we are not going to quite meet that revenue, budgeted revenue. You can see the employee discounts built in there, but I want you to jump down too, to health insurance, which you can see significant increase. We had 4 people that are either signing up for the first time or moving to higher coverage for their, somebody's going to get married in June, that's built in there.
So
two family members.
Young teachers that are turning 26 are rolling off their family coverage, which we knew would happen. We got really lucky for 2 years.
And
so
then a couple of the as the people
Sorry,
turn 26.
I'm one.
Oh, no, you're not. No, that's not. You're not wanting the
daycare.
No.
Well, you'll be the subsidized. You'll be the subsidized person in daycare. But that's no. I will say the same thing people say when they come to me, telling me they're taking time off maternity. It is the best thing in the world. It is awesome. Whatever we can do to support it.
It's like future program participants.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Future discount.
Future discount.
Future discount. That's what we're going to get
that. That'll be a future discount.
I'd like to see, I'd like to see, you know, future jellyfish.
Oh, sure.
I have a beluga in my belly, you know.
That'd be cute. Get that shirt for you. Wear
so
that.
Yeah, we'll see a significant increase there. Yeah. So that, in reality, that net will come down half. So you can see what the significant is for something like health insurance. What a big difference. You know, we have a staff person that's now coming off her parents' coverage. There'll be another one next year. So I think we've been lucky in the last several years, actually, that not a lot of the daycare staff have actually taking the coverage.
Yeah, we went from everybody taking it and then have family coverage to no. And so it seems like a culture shock. But I have to tell you, again, having insurance just really balances, it really attracts really good teachers that we need for stability in that program.
Yeah. So we really have seen the stabilization
of
employees over the last
year
and a half. So
reached market rates, stabilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are some expenses that seem like they're big expenses, but really they reduce your turnover, which is a huge hit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Josh, I'm so glad you realized that, which is so true. That is the way to look at it, because it is.
I still question it. You circled it as a 2x. What the heck's going on?
Which one?
But we talked about this morning.
We talked about this afternoon.
Sorry.
And then also the fitness department, which I think we are making big strides. As you heard, we're over 200 members now, and I think the whole move to the monthly auto renewal premium will really help, and I've just seen a consistency already starting with January, so we're budgeting to actually cut that deficit in half for next year.
Nice.
So
I think that was key.
Positive.
How did the Peloton machine
got some good traction.
Yeah.
We're going to get some
fun
stats.
Fun
intended. Yes. We're going to get some good stats from Peloton at the end of the month, and we're doing a report to the board, obviously, in March for the fitness report. But we had 78 new members for the 2-for-2 deal. We're really starting to see a lot of traction, and I think Peloton helped, obviously. So
but
we'll see what you should use.
Thanks to Adam and Aaron, that was their focus this year, and it really, that with the renewable memberships and the focus. But I even saw the last day one lady came running in, she's like, do I still get this deal? So it definitely brought people in that have never been in the building. And what's our numbers at now?
We're over the 230 mark.
Yeah.
We've really seen a spike.
I know.
Holy smokes.
Fantastic.
We've
been
working in the background.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's about 3% of Glencoe. Is that right?
What's that?
It's about 3% of Glencoe.
Exactly. Which actually is...
Households. It's 3,003 households in Glencoe. So
don't we have 7,800
people? 8,600 people.
8,600? Mm-hmm. Okay, so 2.5%.
That's phenomenal for a fitness center, actually. So with the competition we have, and we really like to see that we're talking. You talk about programming for with our mission, right? For older adults, not the old senior word, or youth. We're seeing both of those. Those are a big attraction to ours. And I have to say that the benefit to the employees that we get free fitness.
Awesome.
But it's not impacting our membership. So they loved it, but it's not hurting
it is,
at the usage of our clients at all. So I want to put that at all.
Timing.
Well, it's different timing, or they're all excited about it, and actually, in reality, they don't use it. So, but if they see it as a big benefit.
Happy. It's a low-cost, high-reward benefit.
Less than 2 employees a day use it. So.
Yes, so it's not a big, but
I'm
they feel like they got that
number. I actually wish that you got that up. And there's a whole bunch of reasons as to why, not to mention the fact that your health
It's more than 2.5 because it's what's the percentage of eligible age range?
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
Really, it's the 2.5 really. Yeah.
It's probably more than that. You work on that.
My 10-year-old wants to come with me. And I told her she's not allowed.
Well, what age should we move it to?
14.
Could you consider with a parental?
You know, Derma, our insurance company,
they won't do it.
Unfortunately, they don't allow under the age of 14.
I would.
Because what happens is you're the good parent, and the bad parent is the one that lets their kid in there, and then they sit in the lounge, so it's too much of a light.
I mean, she's dying to come.
Like, well, that's great. I'm glad
you're
there.
Look forward
to.
Teaching
classes are, kind of a trend that popping up, so we can look.
Well,
at
they have it at Central School in the Tuesday mornings. They have the fitness.
Try rowing. Don't we do youth rowing?
She loves the rowing machine at Central School.
My God, your girl's physical.
She's not. Well, I'm not going to put it on tape.
Youth rowing.
We do have a youth rowing class. Yeah, I'm like, oh gosh.
You have a rowing class.
I do. Okay, so let's go on.
Okay. So the next section really is just more informational narrative.
Yeah.
There's any questions on that, but it's more just to keep understanding the whole fund structure, some of the highlights of some of the funds or the accounts that are in multiple funds. And section four is really the detail, nuts and bolts for every general account number. Then there's a separate further detail of what's included in there. So I don't know if you have any questions or anything that jumps out. I know Michael had quite a few that we went over before, and hopefully I'll...
But we're going to have some agenda items on that tonight?
Yes, we are. As we get to the end. But otherwise, I'd like to just jump ahead to section five. And again, we've talked about this quite a few times now with 165. First appendix is really operation included within our capital or our operational funds. We'd like to point out that the field striper, thanks to Bobby and Chris,
mostly Bobby,
will be now paid for by AYSO.
Oh.
100%. So
wow.
That's
I'm paying for it. Thank you.
So that's going to be moved out of the parks budget and into the program budget for AYSO. But you can see all the individual items in all the different departments. Any questions on any of those?
I just can't believe the washer dryer in the fitness area already has to be replaced. And that you can get one, too.
Right.
Are you kidding?
We do three loads a day. Plus, we do all the daycare.
I wondered how could the towels in that.
So
place?
When the building was designed, they didn't accommodate a commercial washing machine. So instead of doing a costly project to expand to like a fitness center style machine, it's way more cost effective for us to just budget to replace it every year or every other.
I can't believe you're not outsourcing that.
We've
probably not
it.
Enough of laundry for that.
We have actually looked at it in season. We have breakdowns on how much that is costing.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
Yep.
Really, other than the you know, if you depreciate it over 365 days a year, it's less than $5 a day.
Nope. Just gotta do it.
Talking about?
I think it's required.
Washer dryer.
It
is.
No, they have to have one for 2 cents.
It's required.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's required to use it or to have one.
Have it. Okay. Sorry.
You see the NSSRA building in there for 118. So take that out. We're a little bit less than previous year. Fund 65 is on the next page under Appendix B. One thing that did come up, as Lisa mentioned, when the budget was done, we were not sure of the OSLAD grant. Now that we know that we are getting that, we will put in another $20,000 for a community-wide survey. But you see the big item in there is the rooftop units.
Woohoo!
And the retaining
pretty
wall.
Exciting stuff.
And the kiln, they convinced us.
Yes. And the kiln in there.
I expect to see pottery revenue up 20% next year.
Me too. Pottery revenue.
Nothing like pottery revenue.
Pottery revenue.
Probably won't see that, but you'll see a retention of our class.
You'll see a lot of retention.
At the bottom of Appendix B, you'll see all the proposed 169 capital projects that we talked about, almost $2.8 million. And the next page is really the format that...
And these are still proposed, right? These are not...
Yes.
Although, we're pretty much...
They're not bid, so...
Right. We're in bed with the some of these, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. We've been talking about
We were able to... We put in the sale of the Linden House based on what... I don't know where that's at, Lisa, if you want to...
We're putting a request for proposal for brokers to sell the house, so that should go out later this week, and then expect return in about 3 weeks, and then we'll pick a broker and then hope to have it on the market.
One thing that is not shown in here again is the OSLAD grant. So next version we'll have the $400,000 right under the 867 CMAP and IBNR grants. Again, the timing of that money is somewhat up in the air. The CMAP should be realized all pretty much this year, don't you think, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. Since IDOT is paying it out directly.
Carol, I really regret missing this last year. But what is a LUST reimbursement?
Chris?
Well, that's a leaking underground storage tank.
Ooh.
So that's the reimbursement that we received from our insurance company for mitigating the gas tank in the
park. I don't know where your mind was, but of course it's a leaking underground water tank.
Solid cast as well.
Doesn't that make
obviously
sense to everybody?
Yeah. This is, yeah. For those of you that might have missed it, it's the funding sources at the top, about six lines down. LUST reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
Government terminology.
We did get the first $100,000 January 1 for the Duke Playground, and we'll see the remainder of that over the course of the next 2 years. It does show the new bond proceeds in there.
That's net of fees.
Yes. So we also, you go down in
why
yellow.
Why did I think, sorry, why did I think it was closer to 5.8?
Which one?
The
no.
bond? 5.2? No, it was always 4.
4.125.
Okay,
I'm
great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It actually
was
started out
our,
under.
Like, maximum taxable amount.
Yeah, that might have been.
Okay.
Yeah. So the yellow really is budgeted for the new budget year. You also see we are keeping the feasibility study on the fundraiser.
We are. I'm going to have more discussions about mm-hmm. where that goes and if. To make sure there's full buy-in mm-hmm. from the board, because there's a big portion of that the board has to do. So I just want to make sure that before we do that, that you're willing, all willing to do that.
Right. So you can see with the bond proceeds
well,
and the grant.
If I can just
sure.
add
yeah.
something to that. In my experience, you can't be successful fundraising unless you know what you're fundraising for. And so the question for me is like, is there something that the board is willing to go fundraise for? You know, obviously we talked, well, not all of us, but some of us were around for the lakefront plan, and I think we also felt we might need to fundraise for Connect Glencoe, which...
Well, we did, in a different way, staffed it.
We still can.
Yeah.
The train cars and so forth, I mean, they're...
Look, okay.
I completely agree with you.
It could be Watts, for example, mm-hmm. if we get the park grant and want to fundraise for that other half of it. Or if we don't get it, it could be Watts.
Right. So anyway, Lisa, you said you wanted to have more board discussion.
I
about
do
it
definitely.
At a later date, so that's fine. I just
I totally because what you brought up is a very good point. What are you fundraising for? Will does the board want to put the time in that will take to do that? Because a fundraiser comes on, you know, and we can have way more, we'll discuss them later, but we're just going to put that as a placeholder, and if we don't use it, we don't use it. If we decide to use it, great, it's there.
And I think the discussion really is the park grant, Chris, we're going to know August, September, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, they give you a timeline of when they're going to announce, and then they announce 3 months after that. So, I mean, I think August, September is a safe bet right now from what we're hearing.
But that $4.125 million, I think the intention is that's what the bond proceeds would be used on.
I'm sorry, for what?
For the Watts.
Watts or the other capital projects that we have.
Well,
we still have more discussion to have.
Well,
yeah.
Again, but I just,
that, yeah.
I just the fact that we're right now potentially looking to issue June 1st, I don't know if that, the fact that we will not necessarily know about the park grant,
mm-hmm.
do you want to delay the issuance of those bonds?
I don't think we do, but I think we just have to have more discussion of the, because we have $4 million worth of projects, we have to decide what we're going to use it for, so I don't think we delay it. We haven't had, that. Probably next month will be more of discussion of what those projects will be.
How fast?
The priority of that.
How fast do we have to spend the money once it comes in?
2 years.
Three years.
85%
in 3 years.
Oh.
So we'll know.
And if you look at these projects on here, you've got
significant.
Yeah.
The first two are very good.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The second.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Done.
Really?
GHS.
Yeah.
Any questions on the capital? If not, tab 6 is just informational purposes, a breakdown of our operational revenues and expenditures. So property taxes, that's really where you're seeing a breakdown by fund. Program fees. You know, we strive to be 50%, at least 50% program fees, 50% real estate revenues. This year, we're going to get a lot of grants and donations into the mix, which is nice.
Very nice.
And then really, tab 7 is, I think it's also an item on the...
Yeah, it just keeps on going. It's under...
Yeah. Is the proposed annual salary.
Right, the program fees, this is not, does this include the pass-through of like the GJK? Like the $1 million we collect and the $800,000 we pay out? Is that included in the program fees here?
Yeah, rec to programs.
Yep, the thing goes in the rec program, yeah.
Yep. And their payout is in the contractual side
of
programs. This year we are again requesting a 3% merit pool to be spread to all full-time staff. That's exclusive of Lisa as the executive director. That's all done separately of the merit pool. And typically that's, again, looking at what the CPI was for the levy, and that was 1.9, adding on a cushion for our merit pool. And again, people are evaluated on their last year, and some perhaps might get a raise, some might not get a raise, some might get more than the pool, and it really all...
It depends on their how they're performing, and so it's not a blanket, everybody gets 3%, some get less, some more, some we do salary adjustments based on performance and the what our salary survey said, so we make adjustments there too, so but the average is about 3%, between 2 and 4%. Which is stays in, it's very much in line with other park districts, so we're staying competitive with the other park districts in our market, along with very competitive with the village and school district and library. So
it obviously makes sense that you have to remain competitive with other similar employers.
Mm-hmm.
But is there something wrong with my logic here? If CPI increases around 1.5 to 2%, for several years, and then you consistently give out 3% raises on average, realizing that these are merits, so some people are getting more than 3% and some people are getting less, but on average you're giving out 3%. Are you effectively moving your employees up the pay scale
in, faster than CPI?
Faster than CPI?
No, because you, well, taking into account the market, I know for a couple of the positions that went out there for director of recreation, that the starting salary is more than what
we're
at right now. So
yeah,
the market, I think, can impact those grades.
Yeah.
Moving
well,
forward.
So your answer is yes, you're right, but we still have, we have to compete with.
Well, 50% comes from property taxes, right? 50% comes from program revenues. So those program revenues in general are going up 3%+. So half. It's 50-50, that will help with those 3% raises.
I think you're looking at this from, I think the argument is the wrong argument to hear from your perspective. I think it is a combination of CPI and market driven that's doing this, and not necessarily mostly CPI. Like 3% is a combination thereof. So yes, it is higher than CPI. Seems like it's higher than CPI, I'll tell you. Our company in general sticks around to 3% as well. But it's not
conservative, but for the last several years it has not been 3%.
I don't think it's been
2.3%.
Yeah.
So that's what next year's levy is going to be predicated on.
And we have to be careful, just because it's 1.9% here, you've got workers that come from different areas as well, that it may be 2.3% in
different
areas.
Absolutely.
4%, like, so I wouldn't make the argument of, hey, it's I'd say 1.9% is a building block here, and you add on to that. And 3%, I don't know
exactly
what your companies do. Ours, it's pretty, I think it's standard.
Not to mention that as the minimum wage rises, then all the salaries have to go up. Well, then, you know, that pushes them all up. Yeah.
And I think the critical thing is this little competitive employer comps here, and you know, looking at this, other than a little mat that has a little dip, it's pretty much what is to be expected.
I'm not really arguing with 3%. I'm just saying let's be intellectually honest. If the market says we need to raise wages by 3%, that's what we need to do.
Right.
Theory be damned.
Yeah,
but
it's not CPI driven.
True.
I don't think it's
the same question you have is the same question.
Yeah,
that
I'm sorry about
every
that.
Single year we talk.
That's not what we meant.
So
it's not totally CPI driven. Correct.
I mean, some places do just CPI, and then they don't. I mean,
they don't retain staff. And,
right.
Yeah.
I'm leading up to a discussion I would like to have about taxes and several emails that I certainly received. I think several other, I think the board also received them about taxes, probably motivated by people getting their property tax bill in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yep.
I gotta pay that.
We have to be sensitive to that issue, and when people ask us why are you doing what you're doing, we need to be comfortable explaining why we're doing what we're doing.
The 3% increase results in about $60,000 in our budget increase. So, which ironically then probably goes into more of two of the items that you're going to be discussing on later as reasons why. Any consensus on the merit pool then? Just moving forward with the approval draft and evaluations. And
from my perspective, I think it's market appropriate, and it looks like it's appropriate with other participants. And quite frankly, I think if you give less than 3%, you're likely to have that turnover problem. It's exacerbating a turnover problem. I don't think if you go to 4%, it eliminates it. I don't think if you go to 2%, everyone walks. But, you know, you want to mitigate that as much as you can, I think.
Yeah. Good.
Quite frankly, I'd almost rather, a more serious discussion is, do you get what kind of kiln are we getting? Do you get a gas kiln, or do you put that into, you know, that's you could double, you can get 6% increases versus one gas kiln. And so those are kind of the things to actually think about, which is more beneficial for the citizens of Glencoe. Is it staff that's getting paid a little bit more, or do you put a gas kiln in?
Or do you do both?
Well, but it's an either or. Like, if you're going to answer the taxpayer, hey, look, you know, I just spent $90,000 on a gas kiln, but 3 longtime employees walked away because they got better raises someplace else. You know, that's the argument out there. And so that's why I'm looking at this budget with a little more of a fine-tooth comb than I probably do my own budget to some extent. And the taxpayer has every right to be frustrated.
Well, what I would say is that the taxpayers that we've set aside over the last, 6-7 years, $7 million that we haven't had to go back to taxpayers from sound fiscal management. So we've had that money that we've generated through programs and put that back into our capital project, so we didn't have to go back to the taxpayers. Not many park districts, or I would say any governmental body in Glencoe, is saying that we've $7 million we put in there to improve the quality of life for the citizens here. Look at our park and how much
it's
improved. Our if you go back to the survey from the Village of Glencoe, our ratings went up like 7% from 2015. Is that right, Aaron? I'm looking at Aaron. There's actually, people are noticing. We're spending the money, but people are noticing the improvement, and they like the improvement because we have a much higher rating. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it comes down to it. What do you want your parks or facilities to look like?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, John Curmudgeon, taxpayer, and we're going to get the notes from them every year. It's going to say, you know what? I don't care about Watts Park. I want my
I don't care about the playground. I don't care about
anything.
I want
to pay
if you
back.
Yeah, if you give me $300 back on my taxes, yeah. So $7 million in investment, they yeah. could say, look, you could have given $7 million back to the taxpayers, and we're always going to have that. Yes. But the beauty is that the argument is the majority of taxpayers are probably okay with, let's say, a 3% increase, and they're probably also okay with a kiln, right? And that's I haven't been here that long, but if you start to see the percentage of taxpayers increasing that are more vocal year over year, that's when you...
Well, it's going to be this year because the triennial reassessment had a lot of us paying substantially. I mean, my tax bill went up 20%.
Got off easy.
How much is that going to the park district?
No, well, I responded to one taxpayer and I said, 11%. Last data I have, my 7% of our tax bills was for the park district.
Right.
I would appreciate actually if you guys could update us on that.
We could find that out. Yeah. Bill, can you do that?
It's the 2018 levy.
But it's still a shift in the pie, right?
It's on the website, yeah.
Is it still about 7%?
Well, we won't know until the levy in July.
So last year.
You must know for the tax bill that we already have.
No, because it's 55% of last year's tax bill.
But so what was last year? So was it 7%?
It's on the website.
So we'll get that to you.
But if everyone's EAV,
7%
EAV went up 20%.
This is where she springs into action.
Everyone's tax bill should go up no more than 3%, right?
No, only if everybody in the entire Cook County have their bill go up.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
That's not what happened.
I'm hearing you, but for...
In theory, if
everybody's EAV went up in an equal percentage, everyone's tax bill would be only 3% higher.
No, it'd stay the same.
No, because it's CPI.
No, why would you increase your...
Right, because not CPI.
You ignore the inflation if everybody's EAV went up by the same amount.
But for
the government still needs the same amount of money to fund.
But the park district is not, and the argument that we could use is the park district is not gaining X, is overall gaining 2.7-ish% increase.
I've had these arguments, but we're going to continue.
And we just have to continue to have those facts.
So it's 7%.
7.25.
Okay, so it's relatively small proportion.
Yep.
What has our increase in budget been? What's the compound rate of growth over the last 5 years?
Fair question.
And we've also this year, money we brought in the grants.
But people don't care about that.
A portion of our population that really just looks at their tax bill.
Right.
And we're going to get more. Every year we get some. This year we're going to get more. We're already hearing that drumbeat.
So I would like to have answers to, we already have the 7.25%. That's great. Thank you. Could somebody email us that?
Because
we should be able to just...
Can you send that to me and then I can...
Well, better yet, if that's on our website, can we just say, look here on our website?
Yeah.
And then what's the compound annual growth rate of our budget or of our levy? So that we can also explain that. I think, though, the problem is, to Michael, I think this is related to your point. Even if we're responsible on those two measures, if Joe Curmudgeon's bill went up by 20%, he's going to say, I don't care that you're only 7% and that you haven't raised your budget much. I want you to spend less.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Yeah. Your job as a board to decide what percentage of the community really wants that, because by spending less means less services, less pretty parks, less, so you're going to get the part that complains about taxes, and then if you lower our service, then you're going to get the part that complains about there's weeds in the park, or there's garbage in the park, or there's,
These other communities have more than we have.
This guy that demanded, you get together with Bill Corrali and everything.
Oh, yeah, he did that every year.
He comes every year.
Yeah.
So you haven't seen more than that?
No, that's the only one I saw, It was just one. Every year he says that one.
I always talk about real estate values. and how the park district does things in the community that increase real estate values. And if we did,
bad argument, though.
There was fewer young families.
It's a bad argument?
Yes.
Oh, no, it's not a bad argument. Why?
It's because... It's
a fabulous argument.
Because
people
real estate values
it.
Are going down here.
Well...
Like, recently, they're going down. And so you can't...
Not according to my EAV.
Right, not according to EAV. But according... I mean, look...
Well, they're going down
Sally,
everywhere, but we're
Sally Martin hasn't been able to sell her house. She bought it for $1 million, and she's put it on the market for 1.1. She can't get anything for it, but... I mean, it's look. The value of homes is not necessarily
everywhere.
Increasing as fast as
yes.
the EAV.
We're still competing for the same yes. new buyers as all the other communities, and we have to have a reason for them to choose.
I agree.
Right.
So that's where I go with
it. If you have playgrounds
yeah.
falling down, they're not going to choose.
Well,
there's a correlation
selling
between
points like daycare.
Yeah.
And the new fabulous park we're putting.
Right. There's a correlation between. The park, how it's maintained to the correlation to that they want to live here. And we can find those facts for you, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Aaron's already on it. Let me have you tell.
Things happen.
Thanks for that discussion.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Very good discussion, because I know you guys get that. You get more of those than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The next section is really just on the in-service training conferences. Let's take tuition off there because there was no tuition. Oh, slight tuition and reimbursement in there.
For ELC,
Children's
Circle.
Children's
right?
Circle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if anybody has any questions on that. And if not, I think Section 8 is really just kind of a 5-year projection. And honestly, it gets really gray as you get out more beyond the 2 years even.
Yep.
But it does guide us a little bit. Section 9 is on fees and pricing.
Again, the fees and pricing were based on our categories of service, so you'll see, you know.
We've reviewed these. Other than part of the budget process.
Yes, we reviewed actually the beach pricing we had at the committee meeting recently. Yes, so that was reviewed. So that was in your packet. We actually pulled out the beach
memo
in there about the beach fees because those are it's actually in your packet. It's not only beach fees but the operating hours and such. So and then in your budget is the not only again Glencoe Beach pricing but pricing across the board for other programs. And those these are not set in stone. They do fluctuate based on market and instructors and things like that, but usually the percentage remains the same.
Yeah.
So if those go up, then we also make those percentages go up. So. Any questions about the recommended beach and boathouse fees and adjustments to levels of service?
Pretty minimal, right? Pretty minimal.
Yeah,
the boat storage is a little higher.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We pulled hour here, added hour there, added, you know. Aligned to school schedules.
Times too, based on minimum wage, because there's a significant increase to those wages. This year's really adjusted when we did that budget calculations. And then there's some changes based on contractual setting prices. Was there seeing increases for minimum wage too?
Mm-hmm. And the beach fees, staff fees definitely went up. When Deerfield jumped theirs up, so did Highland Park, and so did Wilmette. And Winneka, so
about 10% increase.
We had a jump also. So
does Deerfield have a beach?
They've got 2 pools.
Oh,
yeah.
Pools.
Mm-hmm.
So competing for the same lifeguard pool.
Yeah.
Trying to figure that out. Okay.
Yeah. And some could say it's harder to
patrol a beach than it is a lifeguard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pool.
I would say that.
Yep.
Okay. Does everybody agree with those changes for the beach and the boating house? Because those will go in the brochure that's being finalized.
Yeah.
See the time.
For what it's worth, Bobby talked about these at the Lakefront Advisory Committee
December
meeting and
or
mm-hmm.
December board meeting, I think.
Yep, and Lakefront. Yeah,
well.
Both of them.
Okay.
And the feedback was actually very positive with the lakefront.
Yeah, I thought it was very.
Yeah, it's very very disruptive and
very
positive.
Like,
yeah.
Problem solving together as opposed to. Don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. They understood the dilemma with minimum wage, without a doubt. So,
cost-wise neutral, so we'll hopefully not see a massive impact from the minimum wage increase. This is just to maintain where we're at, see how we do this year. But I think it's a balanced approach.
Any questions?
Any revenue impact from closing earlier? Like those last hour, do you get missed sales?
We did the analysis. Less than 1% of people attending the beach came after 7 o'clock. So really, there's nobody.
Yeah.
We actually think people might like it a bit more.
Especially our residents.
Yeah.
Your residents will love it.
Yeah. So that would be a positive for our residents who don't buy that.
Yep.
They go down there at the night and have to pay.
Yeah.
Like I'm staying there for an hour, I have to pay $10 or whatever.
Yeah,
okay. All right, so we're going to proceed with those then. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. It looks like a lot of hard work went into this.
Actually, I have to, really, Carol and Liz and Bobby with the recreation team spent. Last year was a lot. This year was a lot to bring it up to a new level. And it's a fantastic job.
Chris,
with all of his research. So really, we start this in August. And so there's a lot of thought and consideration that's put into this, and going back and forth and challenging each other. You see this, but you don't see the whole challenging going back and forth, getting staffs and saying, okay, go here. This is getting too high or low. So there's a lot of thought, you know, that goes into it. Thank you. Okay. Next, if you're okay with this, we would like to move on to the discussion about the proposed GPD HVAC maintenance program. And I'm going to turn it over to Chris to talk about this.
Save you guys from reading the whole memo to you tonight. So basically where we're at is the majority of our HVAC equipment here at the Tinker Center is in the last 20 to 25% of its expected useful life. So you can see there's a chart here in the memo where our trend is going. We've gone from spending around $31,000 a year to maintain our district's HVAC equipment to what's projected to be around $70,000 to $72,000 this year.
Okay.
So our current contract is structured in a way that is very reactive. We have a minimal monthly cost that we basically have to call the contractor out every time something breaks. That puts us at the mercy of the contractor, where by the time we're getting our service tech involved, it's already broken, we have an interruption in service, we must repair it. Really, at that point, we're at the mercy of what they want to charge us. So I notated here a few issues that we had in the last 3 years that I considered really totally unacceptable breakdowns, considering that we have a maintenance contract. So what I've proposed is working with a company called Midwest Mechanical for basically a full coverage contract. So they're going to make their profit on maintenance versus repairs. So it's in their best interest for our equipment not to break down, because as you remember, in August we had that equipment breakdown that was nearly a $25,000 cost. That would be completely covered by this new contract, a breakdown of that nature. So the new contract for the Tinker Center wants and GYS is at $82,000, which is $12,000 over what we currently have budgeted. We do expect to see a 12% reduction in the cost of the Tinker Center's contract when we replace the rooftop units on the gym, because those which units are budgeted for next year, those will then be under manufacturer's warranty, and any parts or materials will be covered for 2 to 3 years. So we will see this come down to a small amount more than we're currently paying, but for transparency's sake, I wanted to come to the board with the full contract, because we don't really know if those units will get replaced in March, April, or May, just based on the staging with the contractor and when the bids are approved. So the other challenge that we have is our staffing. We don't really have a full-time HVAC tech. So we have a supervisor who has a tremendous amount of experience in this area, who's been handling a lot of the coordination and repairs, but it's not led us to have a very good succession plan. What it's left us with is one employee who really knows where everything is, and we're at the mercy of whether that employee's here or not, if we can affect a repair. So the idea behind this contract is it's basically full coverage. No matter what happens, the contractor has to pay for it for the fixed amount that we pay every month that the board agrees to, other than replacing every single moving part inside of our existing HVAC unit or replacing coils. So the idea is that this is going to be a much closer relationship than we currently have, where we're going to be moving to preventative versus reactive, if that makes sense. Is there any specific questions, concerns?
What does the village do? What do the schools do for this?
So the schools actually have a small mom and pop shop that does theirs. They're in a little bit different situation because they have 3 months when they're closed.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to schedule replacements and updates at a different time where our facility is only closed a week a year.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different. And the village has a contractor. It's not this contractor, but they do have a contractor. They don't do it in-house.
Is there any way to work with someone to get sort of a better deal by using the village or using the library or using someone else that can service more of Glencoe, or is that
we can definitely ask the village and library if they want to come into this deal. We actually have bigger buildings, so they would save money coming onto ours. Glenview Park District and Journey Park District both use this company.
We do some significant reference checks.
It's good to answer the question of
totally
tax debt, right? And so we all have air conditionings, we all have uses. I've never thought about the school having 3 months down, but the library doesn't and the village doesn't.
I know that my staff point out on a regular basis when they have to cram a summer's worth of maintenance into a week in August.
We have a week in August. Here's our issue is that for example, take the polar vortex last year, where a whole unit went down, and thank goodness we had one on hand, and like five guys were able to get up there.
Yep.
We cannot have a closure of any sort. If we don't have heat in the building, we can't run Children's Circle. And it's not just like, oh, let's move Children's Circle to a different building. We can't run it.
Yeah, you can't run
it.
So then you have all these catastrophic for the parents. I'm not saying not to do it.
I'm just explaining it.
It's because I look. You know, with the budget items, and I saw this earlier today. I was like, oh, wow. And about four of these are agenda items. I'm all for it. I just want to make sure we're doing our due diligence to get the best deal. And if there's taxpayer savings for the library or something else, it's just
I can tell you what we do. I meet with Catherine and Phil and Andrew. We meet monthly a lot of times, and we always talk about what contracts do we have out. And we say, for example, we're looking at, can we work with the bus, or can we do this with them? Can we do this? Anytime there's economy of scale, we definitely do bring them in. So this is another one I've come back and say, hey, we have this contract. Would you like to be in on it? And that we can hopefully lower the rates, everything. We're looking at a busing, working with the school district on the busing contract. Things like that. We're always looking for economy of scale if we can, where it makes sense.
I did a consulting project for a company, I think probably bigger than, but Midwest Mechanical on the East Coast. I totally concur. This is a good idea from a reliability perspective. That's why a lot of the clients or these kind of customers do it, because they can't be down.
Mm-hmm.
Does the contract that we're looking at have any kind of service level agreement, or in other words, what is the penalty to them if our equipment breaks unexpectedly?
Well,
it's their job to do the maintenance and repairs so that doesn't happen.
That's a good question. I mean, it is going to break. There are going to be, you know, times when the cottonwoods lose all their seeds and they fill up the machines and they shut down. I mean, those things are going to happen. If you look at the contract, there is response times where they have to be responsive within so many hours. In talking to their references, we didn't really have any indication that they failed anybody. Our contract doesn't have that stick in the sense that if you have a liquidated damage in your contract, you end up paying for that, because that contractor has to build that liquidated damage into their cost, because they know there's going to be an owner who's going to charge it.
Yeah.
So you're going to basically pay more to be able to hold them accountable and say, well, if every day this unit doesn't work, I'm going to bill you $500.
Well, you can't protect against acts of God. Or,
sure, like force majeure, you can't.
Right, or,
strikes.
20-year-old equipment that you refuse to replace.
Yeah.
Right? But you want to make sure that they have the incentive to do the appropriate maintenance so that you're... equipment doesn't fail, because they're trying. If you pay them $80,000 a year, right, in the absence of any other incentive, Chris, they have the incentive to just never come.
Sure. The amount of visits are specified in the contract, and I think if we get to that point, that's the point where we break the contract. So it's a monthly contract. So if they're not meeting our expectations, that's the point where we can go right back out and find another vendor. I certainly understand what you're saying. But if we were cutting them an $80,000 check, I would agree. But I think when we're on a month-to-month, I think we have that opportunity to just evaluate as we go.
Well, it's good that it's month-to-month. I would demand monthly reports mm-hmm. on what unit did you service mm-hmm. and what did you do.
The part of that is they maintain an online system that we can actually access, mm-hmm. whereas our current provider provides like the carbon copies that are all wrinkled up that were in somebody's lunchbox.
Yeah.
So it's just a whole other level of service above where we're currently at.
Yeah, the service agreement is in here and it's very comprehensive. So it's also 24 hours a day, 365 days for trouble calls and emergency, which is fantastic. So. Yeah.
And there's no overtime rates and there's no crane fees and we don't have to pay for the refrigerant. So those were big
ticket items.
The minute we get a crane out here, that's where the dollar signs start flying around. So
Chris, so, can I ask you real quick, was this end of life kind of like in almost end of life this equipment predicted in that big consultants report that you got
facilities.
On
facilities?
Yes. Facilities. Some of our equipment has aged faster based on the use.
Okay.
Some of our equipment has held up better.
Okay.
So, you know, typically the median lifespan that you really want to start looking at this is around 15 years. Some of our equipment were at the 11-year mark, and it's really not worth making a $10,000 or $20,000 repair on a piece of equipment you can replace for $90,000. So my thought is that with a contract like this, I'm really looking for the goal of extending that life. But we're really right on target. I mean, we were right on target with the rooftop replacements at Watts, and we're right here in the kind of the sweet spot.
So it isn't a surprise.
No.
Based on that report that you.
No.
But okay.
Yeah. No.
All right.
Okay. So wish we could get back. Does anybody have an issue with moving forward with this, including the budget? Okay.
And it's already shown in the budget, is that correct, Carol?
Yes, yeah. It's already put, both of these things are already in the budget. That's why Michael saw the increase in those sections. So
we did have an increase in the service agreement line item, but we had several corresponding decreases elsewhere because we won't be paying for parts out of pocket. So we did have some cuts in other departments once we added this.
Okay. Should we wait for Michael?
Yeah, let's do that.
To get agreement to move it forward.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And then
so let's
before going on,
something else
well, we have to wait for him.
Oh.
Too. He needs to hear this part.
Oh, too. This also.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will. Anyone want a beverage? No.
Olives. Pretzels.
Cashew.
And ice cream.
And ice cream. No pickles.
No, not pickles. Not sour.
No. We typically get ice cream before the meeting.
Oh,
we haven't
lately.
We
really
got to
get back.
It's kind of our thing.
Oh, it is? Really?
We go to Grater's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Get the blood sugar up before the meeting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Bobby comes, but he doesn't have ice cream. He doesn't get one of salad. He just gets like flat tap. He gets like a flat tap water, you know. Puts the money in his 401k instead.
Yes, I do.
Oh, good. So true. Uh-huh.
All right. So, are you okay with us proceeding with this contract?
Good SLAs?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes? Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, next is discussion on proposed landscaping program. Turn it over to Chris again.
The other one that I circled.
A wise man once said, today's capital expense is tomorrow's operating expense. So as you guys know,
flattery will get you everywhere.
We've seen very, very different weather conditions in the spring than we've historically had. And we can't keep saying this is the wettest year on record. We have to start to plan for this to be our new normal. So part of this is looking at what our current level of service is in our park system and how that's been impacted by the weather and how that impact has brought us away from some of the core tasks that we used to do. So you can see here our current operational model. We're spending about $2,080 per acre to manage the park system. That includes trees, mowing, landscaping, conservation, things of that nature. So what our existing standard, we know in the last 5 or 6 years we've invested nearly $6.5-7 million in the park system. So we brought a lot of these parks up to a new level. And we're in a position where we're having a very difficult time maintaining that standard. So parks that opened 3 or 4 years ago aren't looking as good now today as they did 3 or 4 years ago, and that's because we just don't have the labor hours to do that work. So the challenge...
There's 50 times more people are going to live on park than ever once.
And it's not necessarily just that. It's... We have, when it rains 4 days a week and we've made the decision that our goal on a Friday is going to be to make sure that AYSO and baseball can play on Friday and Saturday, that's where the crew goes, and that's no weeding is getting done that day. No trees are getting trimmed. No garbage is getting emptied. No chips are getting raked. So we do these renovations, we raise the level of use, and then we are basically directing our staff to a little bit more high-profile areas, things like running the beach cleaner a third and a fourth time a week during the spring in the summer versus where we were at 4 or 5 years ago. So the existing model that we're using has been successful with open field mowing. Our contractor has done a fairly good job, other than when the parks are underwater, with mowing. Where we struggled with is in horticulture maintenance. Right now we have basically 1.5 employees that manage that directly, and then they're supplemented by our parks laborers in between projects, the pier, baseball, soccer,
tennis,
beach setup, tennis preparations. They're all over the place. So what I've recommended was last year, basically when we got hit by the weather, we kind of went through our budget and we used some of our funds to bring in a contractor for around $25,000 to help us put weeds in front of the community center, Cock Park, Lakefront Park, try to get caught up on the high profile stuff. So what I've proposed is adding an additional $50,000 on top of that $25,000 that we spent last year, bringing us to around $74,500 for the season for horticulture, which brings us up to a price of around $2,500 an acre to manage our 100-acre park system. So the benefit is we have a much higher level of service. We are able to manage our flower beds, landscaped areas, seasonal cleanup, and we're going to be able to provide surge maintenance. So when we're in April or May and we need to have those bodies, we're not we don't have them right now. We're spending our time focused on affiliates and facilities set up, and this is going to give us the opportunity for some additional flexibility in our landscaped areas, our conservation efforts, and we're going to attempt to offset some of the costs on this by raising the cost that we're passing along to our affiliates, because we know if we're spending one labor hour working on baseball, that's one labor hour that we're not pulling weeds in Cock Park. And if we have to pay a contractor $50 an hour, we have to bill that same missed labor hour somewhere else back to that. So we're estimating that we're going to be able to offset around 20% of the expenses, the increased expenses, by increasing the cost to our affiliates, AYSO or GBA, where the majority of our spring and early summer labor is being spent outside of the beach. So is there any particular questions?
I can tell you really quickly for questions is that probably without a doubt, if we didn't allocate our resources and manpower to baseball and AYSO, they would not have had a spring season, either of them.
Oh, yeah. And I talked to Brad Friedman again this morning, and he's just thrilled with what you guys are doing. So
yeah, where 2 years ago we were like, why aren't you getting in the field? Now last year everybody's like, how is Glencoe getting these kids on the field, both soccer and baseball? And it's because of that we reallocated those resources, but then we heard it on the other end. We weren't able to get tennis up and running. We weren't, the weeds were growing, the garbage cans weren't empty. So we knew that something has to, if we're going to keep the same kind of service that the community wants and expects in our affiliate sports programs, but we also have to maintain these. Something had to give. Yeah. So.
So I was not allowed to ask questions earlier today, so I'll ask them now. Your horticulture, you budgeted $70,000, we're spending $79,000 this year, which is where we expect to be. And you're going up to $156,000 for next year, which is a difference of about $78,000, which is what you say.
Yeah.
You're also increasing sod and fertilizer and all that stuff that comes across it. So it ends up being more than almost at least double here. And I'm fine with it. I understand the reason to do it. What I don't understand is the math behind how it was $2,000 per acre up to $2,500 per acre. If we're doubling the budget, I would have expected to be $4,000 per acre.
Seed and sod, are you crossing contractual services and supplies?
I'm looking at the supplies for fertilizer chemicals are up
80%.
So,
and then you look at.
So hold on, just a second. Let me just pull that.
In a horrifically detailed budget.
I'm a horrifically detailed guy.
So, I like it. Account number 1012-0049-5493.
5493 in the first draft is 11,000, and that's cut from 12,500 this year.
We only spent 6,500 this year.
So that had to do with the fact that we had April, May, and June underwater.
Ah.
So we're not spraying for fertilizer, we're not seeding when you can't spray it.
So there's some benefits to the rain. Okay.
There is.
But still, like, how do I reconcile that? Forget the sod thing, because it's not even that much. How do I reconcile that you've doubled your expense and your budget for the horticultural landscaping, but per acre it's not doubled? It's only 25% more per acre.
So that contractual horticultural landscaping covers mowing, and it covers horticulture. So in that budget is also included conservation, which is in another line item, and also tree maintenance, which is in another line item. So if you go down to capital, which is 10-12-5590.
The 119?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where you're. Well, no, the 119 is pavement and site development. If you go down to the bottom, 70, that's going to be tree trimming. That number remains the same.
Yep.
You're going to have conservation. That number is in there, I believe, under maintenance services. So that's 10-12-5350. So you're going to see that number up to 36-150. So those numbers are moved around. So conservation went up a little bit because we needed to spend a little bit more time in the natural area in Shelton Park this year versus the other year. So the costs, the cost increase were directly related to the additional landscaping contract and some additional mowing that was required in the village shared services agreement. Does that make sense, Mike?
Yeah. It does. Do you have labor savings against this somewhere, or
not really?
Not really, because it was just incremental.
Yeah,
right. They're still here.
But they're allocated. If they're allocated something else, it was. Or is there any?
Well, there is when we go back and we bill the affiliates, that money is brought into rec, which then eventually there's a transfer for rec into parks.
Yep.
So there is some benefit to that, but. It's really it's meeting the level of service expected by the community. That's the challenge. There's a lot of times where I go out to a park and it doesn't look good, and I know I don't have an option to change that for a week or 2 weeks based on what we have going on. Yeah. And that's when I know, one, I'm going to not meet the residents' expectations, and two, by the time we're out there in 2 weeks, the situation that we have is going to be 20 times worse than it is on that day.
Is it an annual contract?
It's a per hour contract.
Oh.
So we only pay for what we use.
So this is the higher end, I presume.
Yeah, so this is
conservative.
Basically asking the board for permission to retain this landscaper for 985 hours.
So if the weather's perfect, you might not use all these hours?
Absolutely, Josh.
That's correct.
But do you pay some sort of retainer with them?
No.
No.
They are our mowing contractors, so we pay a per mow cost.
Got it.
So we know we're going to pay per week per mow, and then they're going to bring on these laborers as needed.
Perfect. I'm okay with it.
Thank you for your questions.
Thank you for your thoroughness.
Lisa?
I have to ask.
You too.
Berlin Field a big reason this has? We see the seismic shift in energy going one place and not others? Because I know soccer is just a field with striping, and they pan for the striping.
Well,
so I know you have to do other things to
climate training.
That's like a gross oversimplification.
I apologize.
So there's aeration, there's fertilizing, there's weed treatment, there's irrigation system maintenance, there's goal mouth repair, there's field layout, there's 3 weeks into the season, all the fields have to change.
Yeah.
So Berlin Field, It's a high profile park. I'm not gonna take away from that. I mean, we knew from the beginning that when we built the bathroom was gonna have to be cleaned every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So is that an added thing? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But is it 100 times more than the previous maintenance? No. I mean, we're still cutting the grass there 2 times a week. Do we, as a high profile park, maintain that park to a different standard than general passive parkland? Absolutely. But I wouldn't say that it's disproportionately more maintenance than a Watts Field, or obviously more than West, just based on the fact that West is underwater. But I would say that the heavy maintenance items there are
related to it probably being next to a school more than it being Berlin Field. Just the amount of trash, the bathrooms, the tennis courts. I mean, there is just a tremendous amount of use.
And that's always existed. So I'm just comparing it to the way prior to its renovation.
I would say prior to its renovation, it was maintenance was being deferred. So the proper maintenance wasn't being done.
Exactly.
So even if...
It's true. So true.
Yeah, quite a bit so. I mean, it got to the place where we had to spend $1 million because there was just a lot of things that, that could have been addressed had manpower and funding existed over a long period of time.
So the work we're doing on baseball, other baseball fields that we deferred for years, now we're doing those.
Correct.
Those
I mean, what we're doing at Berlin Field is not different than what the Wilmette Park District is doing at their baseball field or the Winnetka Park District. It's a
standard level of maintenance for a well maintained baseball field. Right?
Correct.
Okay, that's what I needed to hear.
Chris. I'm sorry, Lisa.
That's it. You answer my question.
As long as this is within the overall budget, I'm inclined to say yes. I would say that one of the things that is tricky about these kind of incremental operational expenses is that in the long run, they need to be, either revenue needs to go up or we need to offset operational expenses. Right?
That's a really good point.
I mean, it's not particularly insightful. It's I'm not done yet. Let me just say that. So, I don't. This kind of thing is easier to frame if it's like, okay, the last year we invested $20,000 in LED lighting, and so we think that our electricity spending is going to be $50,000 less this year, right? And so this is basically a plug-in replacement for that, right? So OPEX stays about the same. I just made that up. So as long as this is within the budget that we just talked about, I'm inclined to say yes. I think what I'm saying is in the future, if we could think about these things in pairs like that, as opposed to, we just would like to increase our operating expenses.
Agreed.
Because they'll never go down.
Well, I have to remind you, when we were doing Connect Glencoe, remember when I did the whole presentation for that? I said, are you okay if we put this amenity in, that our expenses will increase to maintain this? I had that frame conversation. When we do things new, our expenses are going to increase.
Right.
And there's nothing offset those increases because there's no revenue generated from that trail and that path. So... Yes, I agree with you, Josh, but sometimes if we increase...
I think today's new initiatives are tomorrow's expectations.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we've been challenged with is, for a long period of time in the park system in particular, we had a really volunteer-driven landscape architecture program. And what we ended up with was a park system that can be highly unmanageable if you don't have the right manpower in place. So, to your point, Josh, resources are really fixed. I mean, there's only so much money that we have to do anything that we do. One of the things we've done here at the Tankev Center is we've very quietly reduced the size of our planting beds nearly 25% in front of the building. Those are things where, is it still taking 250 labor hours to manage those beds in April and May? Absolutely. But we're down from 350 hours. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to get to a point where we have to really look at the park system as a whole and do an analysis and say, what's our dividend? Are we better off with one or two parks that have the formal English garden in them than all of these sprinkled in planting beds throughout the park system that we're really struggling to manage?
Right. Well, this is, Chris, this is why we ask you to present an annual budget and review an annual budget, not individual things like this. I think it's great that you brought it to us. I also think it would be great if we could look at, here's some ways we're saving money. At the same time, not at the same time, it'd just be nice to know, like, this is how we're improving our efficiency. But at the end of the day, I can really only judge based on the overall budget.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point.
You know, and I think we know if we have to, we have that challenge and we have to make cuts. You know, do we want to have weeds in our flower beds? Absolutely not. But are those the kind of things that impact participant safety and field use? No, they're not.
Right.
So I think we have, like you said, it fits into the budget right now, so and it fits into keeping our standard the same, but this is one of those things that if we have to reevaluate, we can always go back and reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a multi-year contract. I mean, it's other districts have done that with things like holiday lights and things like that when they say, well, we just don't have that in our budget this year. And I think that you manage it from year to year and, you know, you go from there.
Exactly. Okay.
Appreciate that.
All right. So we're advancing that also?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
What?
Yeah, I'll sign something.
Okay.
Talk to me something.
Other business, I just want to bring up that the we have had correspondence about the Frank Lloyd Wright cottage from the neighbors. We have been asking Bethel Shoring Society to have a meeting with the neighbors. We did meet with one of the neighbor directly adjacent to across from the park, from Maple. Is that Maple? Anyways, the Frank Lloyd-esque house.
The north end.
Yeah, right. North end.
North.
Met with the owners of that house, had a great discussion, dispelled some of their concerns, you know, that you build up in your mind. So we've asked the Circle Society to have another neighborhood meeting with all the neighbors. They have yet to give me that date, but Phil and I are adamant about that, to get that on the book so that we can talk about some of those things that they're concerned about.
Allay some of their fears.
Allay some of their fears that you know, that build up in your mind that really aren't factual, but, you know. So answering some of those questions that from the email that you got today. I will let you know when that meeting takes place. Don't know if we have the full board there, because it would be, it's not going to be a committee or a board meeting. It's going to be more like a historical society answering those questions, but I will let you know when that takes place.
Yes,
based on the board.
So the countdown's starting, right? So the 365 days.
Oh, yeah, it started the day they signed the lease.
It started the day they.
I will say it is, I would love to have, I think if we had a set of questions that, or like FAQs out there on our website or something that we could refer people to would be very helpful, because right now the public is blind. We're waiting for a meeting to come up, but we don't have any answers. I think the GHS also needs to really be on their. They need to stop dilly-dallying and figure out what the use of this building is, to be honest with the residents. But right now, what I think is the biggest impediment to success here is a lack of transparency, that there is no place for citizens to go for answers, and to wait for, you know, to get people together for a meeting is not helping the situation. So I would, if we talk with our friends at GHS or we talk with our friends at the village, if someone were to put it on their website, FAQs out there.
They have volunteered to do that, and they are drafting that right now, but a lot of times just words get misconstrued too.
So
we've asked for a neighborhood meeting also.
Yeah.
And if they come, they can. If they can't, you know, I've answered a lot of the questions myself too, when I can. There's things they're worried about, that they don't have the specifics yet about how they're going to address drainage. That's not more of the concern, is that they are going to address drainage where the house sits, and it won't dispel onto the sidewalk. It won't hamper their walking. That will be addressed, or they won't get a permit to move the house.
Right.
Things like that people have to know, you know.
Right, but then those are the things that would be, it would be great as board members and quite frankly as residents, that you could go and have that publicly available someplace. I know the answers can be difficult. I don't think it's actually, quite frankly, our job to do, but I do think it is wise of us to pressure the historical society.
Yes, they are developing that document of such.
And I expect the meeting will be, today's the 4th.
I asked for next week.
Or organization is coming back and ready to go on the 10th, so we could have it the 11th or 12th.
I asked for them to give dates for next week, so I'm still working through that.
Okay, good.
But I will express that the board really would encourage them to have a meeting next week.
And quite frankly, to have some sort of transparency by the end of next week as well. Whether it's a meeting or FAQs on the website.
I made it very clear that transparency is very important with this project to make it a successful partnership. Okay. All right. That's all I have.
Does the committee have any questions prior to advancing the 2020-2021 budget for approval at the March meeting?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Recommend. Vote recommended motion. The board is, will now enter. Oh, recommended motion for closed session.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120-2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter into closed session to discuss personnel as mandated by Section 2.06, open parentheses 5, ILCS 120-2, little c, 1, close parentheses. Those present during executive session include commissioners.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
No.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes. Okay, this is... Oh.
Hold it.
Yeah,
I entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
All in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
All opposed, motion passes.
Time?
10:04.